When you hear the slot machines, when you walk by the card tables, do you feel a tingle? Some people don't. Others definitely do, and this is their story. So, placed your bets. For the next hour, we'll roll the dice, deal the cards, and sit down with some gamblers. You are hearing voices from NPR, the best of public media. I'm Alex Chadwick of Conservation Sound. We'll start in America's gambling mecca, Vegas, baby. And here is Scott Carrier.
I was driving by Las Vegas on I-15 going south one night last summer, and I stopped to get some gas. I should have just got the gas and left, but I got kind of mesmerized by all the lights, all the money, and all the people.
Have you been gambling tonight?
Yes, every night.
You're a professional gambler?
No. I'm a loser. Seriously.
How long can you keep losing?
As long as you got money.
Where do you get your money?
I got a savings account. But, you know, I don't plan on staying here. I've been here about a month. I've been gambling about a month, and man, been a number on me. I'm going to leave in about a week. But, you know, I would do it again. If I could do it all over again, I'd do it the same way.
It's the bet. It's the thrill of the bet. It's better than a firefight in Vietnam. There's only one other thing that I'd rather do, and that would be in a firefight and a hot LZ in Vietnam.
I'll tell you, I believe in a lot of the gamblers, voodoo, you know. Like, I'll be playing craps, and for some reason I can feel that seven's coming. I just know it. I know it's going to come seven, and sure as heck, as soon as he hits the table, seven. I just get a gut feeling inside of me. But I don't. I guess it's because of greed. I won't stop myself beforehand. I get that feeling. You know what I'm talking about. You'll get that sense that's going to tell you you're going to lose, man. Pull them off. You know, say you're off, but you get greedy and you want to, well, maybe not, so you ignore it. I believe in it. Yeah.
Yeah, luck has a lot to do with it.
Luck has not a damn thing to do with it, as far as I'm concerned. You make your own luck. You make your make or break point. We live in a free-flowing universe, okay? You're a spiritual being. There's very little you can't do if you put your mind to it. And if you go in and walk in that table and say, you know, I'm going to win five hands and then leave, if you had no other considerations, you would do that.
Whole dichotomy between a competition. There's got to be something that's got to win, something's got to be less, something's got to be down, man, something's got to be up. I don't believe in that, man. I don't believe in competition in the least, man. I don't believe in this holistic attitude toward life. I'm a consciousness technician. I know biofeedback technician, man. I can get half brainwave, pretty much a slip of love in 45% of my cases.
Have you been gambling tonight?
I've been gambling, I've been drinking, I've been smoking. I passed by some acid, man. I'm going to see some light, man. I hope I get some luck, man. I'll bet anything that runs or walks or rides, man. I'm a 6-hour man. I broke my leg. I fought after I broke my leg, man. I'll kill for my lady. I want that one in the blue and purple stripes. So turn around and go to your right. And notice, just take your time, man. Stretch out, relax.
O'clock in the morning, and I still hadn't got any gas. Things had kind of quieted down, but nobody was turning off any lights, and nobody much was going to bed.
My boyfriend's over there. He's playing on the table, or he's playing something else, or to keep the time going, I play the slots. Or I like to play roulette. Then I went over there on roulette. Roulette's pretty good, yeah. The other day, I was a different casino. I spent $10. I played for 3 hours. $10. I'm here on vacation. I work all week long. I work, you know, my regular job. I saved all year, and we came out because we're visiting my boyfriend's daughter. We're staying over with them. Been trying every year. We said we're going to go. We finally did it. Saved enough to come out. But now we don't want to go back. And we have to, of course.
If you're in a hurry to do anything, regardless of whether it's gambling or whatever it is, it doesn't do you any good. I think you're doing the wrong thing.
Do you live around here?
No, I live in Connecticut. But I come out here probably 10 times a year.
Why?
I like it. I love it out here. I like to gamble, and I was brought up with a gambling family, and I'm free. I'm not a married man anymore. I was only married one time when I was 56 years old. And my wife died. I found her dead on the kitchen floor in West Palm Beach. And that's about 15 years ago. I hardly even knew my wife, you know, being married only 18 months. Well, anyway, I wound up and... Oh, God. Where the heck was it? 74. I can't remember, but anyway, I wound up... Oh, my God. It's been so long ago, you know?
When the sun came up, I finally put some gas in the car and got back on the highway feeling pretty wasted. I was glad to get out of there.
Steely Dan from Can't Buy a Thrill. Writer Scott Carrier is from Salt Lake City. You are hearing voices. Place your bets. Also from Utah, musician Philip Kent Bimstein, composer of Casino Suite, based on an interview with Tom Martinet, who works dice tables in Vegas.
When people come to gamble, they come to eat, to drink, to gamble, and to have sex. Eat, drink, gamble, sex. Eat, drink, gamble, sex. Eat, drink, gamble. Eat, drink, gamble. Eat, drink, gamble, sex. This is simply a stylized form of living. I think it's very stimulating. It's a tremendous feeling. Gamblers, for some reason, think that they can win. Over the long run, everybody loses. Unless you're cheating. get that cash and get out the door before it means anything in a gambling joint. I'm constantly amazed at how much money people lose, and they make no attempt to steal it back or to grab it and run. There are no time clocks in casinos. Basically, you don't want people to know whether it's day or night. They get lost. You watch people, like at the slot machines, they're in another world. They're all on their own. There's a fascination. Fascination.
Fascination.
Fascination.
Fascination.
Fascination.
Fascination.
Fascination.
Fascination.
I think it's very stimulating. It's a tremendous feeling. Eat, drink, gamble, sex. Eat, drink, gamble. Eat, drink, gamble. Eat, drink, gamble. Sex.
Memorandum to the accounting department. Subject, $90 expense discrepancy. As I attempted to explain earlier, the whole thing might not have come about except for a parade. You will recall that this was in Missoula, where the University of Montana is. It was homecoming weekend. Well, the parade came along, a great, clear, brilliant morning for it. I think the sounds must have carried to Oregon. Anyway, after a while, I followed back along where the marchers had come, and a little farther on, thinking that with everyone outside celebrating, this would be a quiet opportunity to investigate the Oxford Club. There aren't so many places left in this country where you can make a simple living, or lose one, playing cards in a bar. We put a stop to it as soon as the country got respectable. And Las Vegas and Atlantic City are too fast and hungry for the kinds of games that are always going on at a back table in Westerns when the marshal walks in for a whiskey. But happily, the tradition goes on at many saloons in Montana, and the Oxford Club is famous among them. I met a man from Holland there who said it was the most American place that he'd been.
If there's any game that sort of personifies the national character of this country, I think it's poker. Poker is how the West was won. I mean, they've been playing poker in this country for hundreds of years.
The Dutch philosopher could afford this attitude. He was winning. The actual best card player I saw, though, was an old cowboy named Red. He had a wide-brimmed straw hat with the sides rolled up and some little colored enamel pins stuck in the crown. Poker hands showing four aces. Red didn't show anything while he was playing. His lips pressed together in a thin line that turned down at both ends. He looked mean. Although away from the table, he didn't seem so hard.
I usually play about 12 hours a day, every day of the week and the month.
Have you ever done anything that was more fun than gambling?
No. No, I sure haven't. Of course, everything in life is kind of a gamble, you know. I bought ranches on time, and I was gambling at everything about that I did, but this is more fun, this day-to-day gambling. It keeps you interested at all times. A lot of these young people say, well, I don't understand it. Well, I don't do nothing else. They do. I don't have any other mental strain, only while I'm playing cards. I don't think about anything. And I think that's the answer to it. I've always been fairly ambitious and active, and You know, you just kind of do these things out of the way.
I'm coming to the $90 pretty soon. Just wait a minute. The front door of the Oxford opens into a long room with a bar that runs down the right side to a grill counter in back. Although this is not a place that people go for food. It's got a high ceiling and tall windows in front, but the light is never really very good. It's full of characters who look as though they're there because they got tired of waiting at the bus station.
I don't know whether it's been 100 years or not, but it's been here for years and years and years and years. And the people out of town, the people from Canada and people from, like, you're from your place or from the East, they've always been to the Oxford.
That was another of the good players, a man named Cap. He looks gentler than Red, but between the two of them, I believe that Cap has got most of the $90.
Well, it is a Western bar. A lot of cattlemen and stuff come in here. It's just people that love to gamble and love this kind of life. Come here. Oxford has been a good place, yeah. I always pay all night Friday night and Saturday night, and sometimes during the day on Saturday. My wife's out there playing now. She just sat down. She didn't know what a card looked like until she got watching me play poker, and she got tired of watching me, so she started playing too. Now she plays when I do.
How long have you been sitting at the table today?
Today? 18 hours.
You've been playing for 18 hours straight? Mm-hmm. It's 12:30 Sunday, just a little past noon.
We got here at 5 o'clock last night.
You don't look exhausted.
I am. I definitely am.
I played for a while in the afternoon in a $4 limit game where I thought nobody should get hurt too badly. The guy sitting beside me was probably 10 years older. He had a nice-looking woman with him. Not his wife, I thought. A wife wouldn't sit and endure this. He was drinking Coors Light beers and playing badly. He'd start a hand and bet way beyond his cards, and then he'd get his wallet out and open it up to the bills, all packed together, and pull out another 20. He'd cash it for more chips with the dealer and ask for another Coors, too. He kept telling the woman that they'd go after the next hand, but he was still there when I left, losing as much as he could. I'd bet all your $90 that he broke awake at 3 o'clock the next morning in a motel room 100 miles south of Missoula, hoping she was still with him. I think that's what happens to you after something like that. Lie still in the dark for a while. Wonder where this place is. Get up and cross to the bathroom. Close the door. Hit the light switch. Drink some water. Watch yourself in the big mirror behind the sink. Start to remember a little. Get the wallet and look where the fat slab of 20s once rested, and it's almost all gone. Think of a lie to keep her from knowing what happened, which is crazy, because she was in the Oxford and saw the whole thing.
The Oxford is just an absolutely beautiful place to come. Have you looked around? There's so many people that are just so unique. And they have this rogues gallery, you know, people that play in here all the time, play cards, and they serve brains and eggs on the menu, a 24-hour menu. They have a card game going all the time. It's just a beautiful place to come. A lot of people, you know, are maybe a little afraid of it, but, what a great... I don't know what to tell you. It's just a great cross-section of America in here.
People play cards all the time at the Oxford. Although the old men complain the place has slot machines now, and they say the newcomers want a lot of action, they aren't interested in the complicated games that used to get played. Still, there are those who come to the Ox and pass an afternoon, not so much to win or lose, as to study how to be, which lesson is on display all the time.
working hard, staying out of trouble. I don't know what you're doing. Staying away from the drugs. Glad to hear it.
And all I can say about playing cards, the best thing is to get good cards, and if you got a good hand, bet it for all it's worth. If it isn't good, get rid of it. I don't always do it, but I can sure tell how.
Memorandum conclusion. The $90 went for research into a piece I was working on that never came together. For what it's worth, the best two pair in the world will consistently lose to three of a kind. And don't play cards for money with a man named Red. There are several witnesses who will verify all this at a place called the Oxford Club in Missoula, Montana. The phone number wasn't listed in the book, although a Dutchman I met there said he'd become such a regular that he'd had it printed on the dog tag of his mutt, which was always running off. So if you go to Missoula, look for a skitty black dog named Floozy. She's wearing a collar. Or just ask around. Everybody knows how to find the ox. Poker at the Ox was produced by Carolyn Jensen, sound engineer Michael Schweppe. I'm Alex Chadwick. Coming up, we play Keno, Cards and Craps in Sin City. Place your bets. There's more in a minute from Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. And the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
You are hearing voices with Place Your Bets. This next piece is by Joe Frank from his hour Zen. What happens in Vegas does not always stay in Vegas.
This goes back to 1959. I was working in Vernon, California, and I was having some difficulties. So I was seeing a psychiatrist at the time. And after the second or third week, and I used to sing three times a week, for whatever reason, on Friday night, I'd get into my car, I'd drive to the airport, and I'd go to Vegas. And I'd start gambling. And I really gambled. I mean, I started with a couple of bucks, but I really... This went on for 5 or 6 months. And one of the basic problems that I had was at the beginning I was a winner. The very first day I walked into the Stardust, I remember this very vividly. I went up to play. I didn't know anything about craps at the time. I went up to play Keno, and I played Keno. My very first round of Keno, I put down $2 and picked 10 numbers. And I walked back with something to eat, and I looked at the board at the Stardust, and I saw that five of my numbers were up there already lit. I knew I'd get 2-1. That was $4. So I walked back toward the cage, the cashier cage, and I gave him my slip. I didn't look at anything else. And he says, just a minute. And he went back into the room to check the numbers. And he comes back, he says, you're a real winner. I said, of course, I got $4, you know. He says, yeah, sure, you got $4. And he takes out $100 bills. And he starts counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He hits 26. I was with a friend by the name of Frank DeSalvo and his wife Dolly at that time. They give me $2,600. Because I hadn't looked at numbers. I actually hit 8 numbers, which gave me 13-1 odds. I got $2,600 instead of 4. And in my celebratory move, I took $100 and gave it to the cashier. So Frank looked at it. He says, schmuck, he says. You think they give you money when you lose? Why'd you give $100? You give me $100. Okay, so I kept going back, and I kept seeing the psychiatrist. And I have to tell you the truth, it never helped. I stopped seeing the psychiatrist, and I started going to Vegas 3 times a week. And I kept going there, and I learned how to play and win. I really did learn how to win. My problem was I didn't realize that life is, how would I put it, life is a paradox. You see, when you win, you have to lose. When you live, you have to die. Everything's a paradox. But I was on my winning streak, and I won lots of money, $30,000, $40,000, lots of money. And I set up credit in all the hotels. So paradox sets in about 8-9 months later, and I start gambling. Obviously, I sign my name on the bills and on the chits, and I had IOUs for $25,000 eventually at the Desert Inn, $25,000 at the Sands, $25,000 at the Stardust. I had a credit of about $125,000. At that time, I heard about a game called Baccarat. So I always have interesting life because everything I do the first time, I'm always a winner. So I walked to the Baccarat table. I sat down with $20 bills, a couple hundred dollars, and I walked away with about $3,000. I couldn't lose. And then paradox set up. I started to lose. When I say I started to lose, I was betting $500 on the line, taking the odds, the hard 10, the odd 4, taking all the numbers, whatever it was, and I was going through money like, I would say, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a day. Well, that couldn't last, but I was kiting checks, because if I lost at the Stardust money and don't make my chit good, I'd go over to the Desert Inn and ask for $25,000. They give it me, I go back, pay the Stardust. But I owe the Desert Inn $25,000. I kept this up for about 3 or 4 months, until the place I was working had a fire. It was the biggest fire in Los Angeles that year. At that time, we were making replacement picture tubes for television. Big business. And our fire was interesting because it started in a warehouse. Now, you may not understand this. The reason it was the biggest fire is because all of these television tubes are vacuum tubes, okay? They evacuated of air. So when the first tube goes, the glass, it shatters the glass, and all the charred shards, S-H-R, go into the other tubes. So it's like a battlefield, because every tube was exploding. As a matter of fact, it was the biggest fire that year, and the helicopters were above, and they were, it was unbelievable. Just at that time, I had lost about $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. I had no place to go. I had nothing. As the fire was ending, and I was sitting in a car with Charlie, 3 men, must have been 3 feet wide, 5 feet wide, the strongest men. I mean, you see them in the movies, but you never thought you'd meet them personally. They came over. They were looking for Milton Schindler. They were from one of the gambling casinos in Vegas. And they gave me a week to come up with $25,000. A week. And I said, well, I don't have it. Well, if you don't come up with the $25,000, you'll never have need of another penny. So I said, is that a credit? Take it as you see it. So I still had some credit, and I went up to the Bank of America. My last $25,000 I took out on loan, which I never paid back, incidentally. Took care of Vegas. I was out of a job. I was out of money. I went to the seashore. I went to the Santa Monica, and I started praying to God to help me. And then I called home. And I really called my mother in New York, because I was going to commit suicide that night, and I wanted to say goodbye to her. That was my very, very first attempt at suicide. It never went through. I got another job from Charlie, but that's the end of my Vegas story, period.
How'd you pay the money back?
I never paid the money back.
Did you go back to the psychiatrist?
Oh, yes.
What did the psychiatrist say?
He said, I got to be paid. If you don't pay me, I can't see anymore. So I didn't have money to pay the debts. The psychiatrist must have kept me for you know, about a month, but that was the end of the psychiatry.
What about the horse you bought?
Oh, the horse I bought was probably before that, with Charlie Thorne. That was about 2 years before. The name of the horse was Tiny Bell.
This is kind of like ritualized life. It's very much like religion. You don't invoke the blessings of the gods to have nice weather. What you invoke the gods for is so you don't have hailstorms, so you don't have locusts, so you don't have the fearful things. The fearful things. There's a lot of superstitions in gambling. Let the cocktail waitress serve you a drink because it's bad luck. Bad luck. Don't wear a red tie because every time I wear a red tie, I lose. Bad luck. Guys used to wear certain clothes. If they win the first time out, they'll keep the same shirt on for 3 or 4 days. Was a guy at the Riviera years ago, and he would take a salt shaker when the dice were passing. He'd go around and pour salt behind the shooter on the floor. And years later, they found like 50 or 60 salt shakers in the podium after this guy retired. Don't let the cocktail waitress serve you a drink. Don't wear a red tie. Don't let the cocktail waitress serve you a drink. Don't wear a red tie. Don't let the cocktail waitress serve you a drink. Don't. So you don't have hailstorms, bad luck, locusts, bad luck, fearful things, 50 or 60 salt shakers. Everything in life is a gamble. You can gamble on how fast a raindrop will come down a window. You can gamble on how fast a cockroach will go across the floor. We just like to gamble on things. This is kind of like ritualized life. It's very much like religion.
That was Tom Martinet, who trained to be a priest, but instead started working Las Vegas dice tables. The composition is by Philip Kent Bimstein from his Casino Suite. You are hearing voices, and we're talking to gamblers like musician Kelly Roberti.
I've played the bass since I was 12 years old. My mother was a piano teacher, and my father taught music in public schools for over 40 years. All I heard around me was music, wonderful music, from Louis Armstrong to Tin Pan Alley to Broadway. I, as a four-year-old, could sing every word to Carousel and Kismet, You know, there's pictures of me laying next to this little monaural Magnavox singing, "If I loved you time and again, I would make you." It was never a question of me not being a musician. I'm happy, you know, I've played all over the world. I've played in the Village Vanguard. I've played at the Blue Note. I've played in Paris. I've played in Tokyo. I've played in London. I've seen the world playing my bass. But, say 3 years ago, I lost my bass in a pawn shop when I slid into this gambling thing.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're currently playing issue number 2, that's K2. You've just won a chance to play issue 4.
The Keno thing and the gambling thing for me, and when I hear those, you know, I'd walk into the casinos. It was almost like it's an athletic event. Cruising in, you know, lighting up a Camel filter and sitting down. "Can I get you something to drink?" "Oh, I'd just like a cup of coffee, please," you know. Straightening myself up there and pumping a $5 bill in, you know.
"Thank you.
There's no way you can beat these things. Come on, and all you're going to win is $800, which obviously I put in 1,000 times. 1,000 times. I put in $800. I won $800 three times. It's not about winning. You don't win on these pre-programmed pieces of junk.
"Oh, no. You just won the $5. Now trade.
And I splintered. I became like these 30 voices of arguments inside of me. How, you know, these money problems, it's like trying to keep up my image and all these things, and splintered off into these voices of, "You got to do this, no, you got to do this, no, here's what you're getting," you know, all this, you know, like, this is almost over, you know, the real devil in the back. I'm going, "Hey, man, don't worry. You don't have anything left now, man. You've pawned the TV, you've pawned the VCR, you've pawned your bass, you've pawned your amplifier, you've pawned your father's stuff, you've taken money from your best friends, you've called people and got them to send you money, you've done everything you can to keep this crap going, and pretty soon you're out. It's done." And then there's also this voice in the back like, "Hey, man, just settle it all right now. Just go get a gun. When you go to the pawn shop, get a gun and shoot yourself. Do it. Do it." And the other voice is going, "Kelly, come on. Pull out of this. Get help. You know, get help." Another one's going, "Oh, help what? Get help doing what? How are you going to pay for that anyway? Get help doing what?" Sooner or later, you're hearing them all at once. There's no more harmony. There is no more harmony. The choir can't do that anymore. And I'm sure that, you know, somebody will hear this and understands what I'm saying.
"Yo, God. Yo, buddy."
Then the big smack, you know, the big smack hits. The lightning hits and you go, "God, no, 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 no." And that's from one voice. All of them come together to say no. But the reality is, yeah, sorry, this is real. Yeah, it did happen. I thought when I was done with it that my family would be there, you know. Well, my mom and dad, brother and sister were. But my child and my wife were gone. My friends were gone. I was 40 pounds overweight. I looked like I was 65 years old. I could still play bass, but I didn't practice it anymore. I spent that time sitting in front of a machine, feeling sorry for myself. It hurts now even to speak about it, really. And I understood then that it was time to go, time to do something with my life. One evening, in real grief on my floor, I was on my knees in my room, trying to meditate, doing some really deep, deep prayer and feeling stuff, all of a sudden this little, one little golden flash of like iridescent cotton or something started floating across my room. And then it was followed by a bunch of other ones. I thought, okay, I'm going out now. I'm dying, you know, I'm dying. And then they started exploding into these like little crystals of stuff all over the place. But then I couldn't handle it anymore, and I burst out in tears. And I understood then that that you create your own goodness, your own angels. They're out there. They're yours to use. And a lot of times it will be created for you if you ask hard enough. After that, almost daily, I found that a little angel would come out of every human being I ran into. There was a hint in everything around me then that I understood, a clue about life, about being alive. And it continues to happen to this day. So I actually just went public with it, and everybody I saw, I wrote a letter even to the editor of the paper here, just to tell people that I was okay, and sat around and tallied up all the monies that I had absconded, total over $70,000, and I continue to try and pay it back now. I haven't gambled since that day. I haven't rectified everything yet, but I'm getting real close. So that's and back to the base, back to the base. The base is like almost like the addiction thing, but it's a good part. The peace that I'm finding through all this is that I can walk straight ahead now. It's so funny, I drive down these streets here and I don't even see casinos, that tells me a lot about what addictions are. It will take you right down the road your weaknesses are. I did believe the world owed me something and that it would come through the machines, and it did. Okay? Point blank, it did. We all think about philosophies and stuff, but I tell you, you can't go hunting for it. You can't go hunting in books and things. It's not going to find it that way, You're not going to find it in religion. There's these secret little angels out there, little spirits out there that you just have to connect with. There's goodness around us, There's just real goodness around us.
Lock it up for CR.
God, look at that. My hands are sick with sweat. And I swear the heat from the cash in my pocket is just about burning me. It's nothing. It's just patient
Lock
working
it up
on me.
CR.
She called CR? I can barely hear her. The casino's got a PA system so bad Radio Shack wouldn't sell it. The casino. Hollywood Park Casino. Yeah, there's a euphemism for you. Hollywood Park's not in Hollywood. And it's not a park either. It's a horse racing track. But I guess it sounds better to say you spent a day at the park and not lost the rent in the fifth at the track. And this joint ain't much on glamour either, I'm telling you. Gray walls and glass block. Somebody's idea of architectural flair. You got a little touch of neon here for that Vegas feel. Yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't matter either. As far as L.A. goes, it's my best bet, my only bet for gambling. Not gambling, gaming. Gaming is what the industry calls it. Yeah, it's another euphemism. I didn't gamble away the money for the electric bill. I gamed it away. I didn't lose the rent money, did I? Wagered it on a game of chance. Yeah. Ooh, boy, the lies people toss when they got a bad jack and the money's tight. And the other people. I don't have to tell no tales. All I gotta do is just lift some cash from where Beverly hides it behind the picture of me and her on vacation at the Club Med in Cancun. Yeah, it's a good picture. It was a good vacation back before we started arguing. Her opening her yap every other minute to call me a thieving gambler and hiding her extra dough under the sink or in the books on her shelf, or behind the picture of our better days. Whatever. Whatever. But I tell you, she won't have any smart talk and hot words when I kick that door open and wag a swag that's, what, 3, 6, 10 times 10 the amount I borrowed from her. Hey, boy, let me tell you something, I will. I'll have that money as soon as I win again, gaming. But to win, I gotta play. And to play, I gotta get myself seated at the poker table. That's the thing. Hollywood Park, what this joint lacks in glitz, it is long on poker. Poker is got in spades. 5 stud, 7 stud. Omaha, high-low, Mexican, hold'em, all that. All those games, and the joint's always brimming with people, to the point where every other player's got to put his initials on the board and wait for a spot to open, wait to get the call from whoever's
AG
working that player's
two,
board.
Four, what hold was A.G.
A.G.? My initials were on the list below A.G.'s. If A.G. is not here and he got tired of waiting and split, then I get the call. I get seated at the table, and today... Well, today I'm going to own that table. I'm going to tell you, don't matter who I'm squaring against or how well they work the cards, no question, today is my day. I just got that lucky feeling. And it's not because of some BS gambler's intuition. Because I woke up and rolled over and the clock said 7:11. Well, I caught 3 green lights in a row out driving. No. Well, I'm telling you, today I got luck because I just do. You know, you gamble long enough. You know, you know when the luck's riding with you. You know, you feel it. It's a sensation, like the feel of the green felt in your fingertips and the cards in your hands. And it's all about the cards. You just listen to the cards. You listen, and they will tell you what to do. And right now, the cards, oh, boy, it's me they're calling.
A.G.? A.G. for 2-4, hold 'em.
A.G. ain't here. Look, cross him off. Call me.
Last call for A.G. for 2-4, hold 'em.
He's not here.
Last call.
Call me.
Yeah, I want that spot.
Damn it. Look at that yahoo. Eating half a sandwich, letting it drip down the front of his Lakers t-shirt like he's their slob mascot. Why don't he just stay where he is and finish stuffing his hole?
Lock it up. Lock it up for A.G.
So what? So we got a spot. Ain't no biggie. All I gotta do is wait. People can't play all day. Well, some can, but some will get cold and drop soon, and I'm next. I get to call. I get a seat. I get to play. All I gotta do is wait. Wait and win. Get home with the money before Beverly finds out I borrowed it because she told me in no uncertain and profanity-laced terms that the next time I borrow money, she is conscious. Oh, jeez. But it don't matter. It won't come to that. All I gotta do is wait. Wait and win. And get the winnings back to Beverly, and no problem. Luck's riding with me. Today is my lucky day.
We give life to these things. The dice hear things because the dice have ears. Watch the dice. Come on, dice, be nice. Watch the dice. Watch the dice. Come on, dice, be nice. They're coming out again. Here they go. Bet's down. They're coming out. 8. Soft and fluffy 8. Now you need an 8. All right, they're coming out again. Here they go. Bet's down. They're coming out. 8. 3. Gamble. 8. Soft then Fluffy 8. Now you need an 8.
Lock It Up was written by John Ridley for NPR Morning Edition. The performers were Bob Wisdom, Yang Chi, and Jim Wallace. Before that, the story and music of jazz bassist Kelly Roberti.
Winner 7 from Line 107. Winner 7 from Line 107. Winner 7 from Line 107.
Casino, premiered 1997 in Las Vegas, performed by Sierra Winds. Composer Philip Kent Bimstein's site is bimstein.com, B-I-M-S-T-E-I-N. Joe Frank's work is at joefrank.com. I'm Alex Chadwick of conservationsound.com.
It's very much like religion. Unless you're cheating.
And there are links to everything you heard this hour at hearingvoices.com.
Eat, drink, gamble. Eat, drink, gamble. Eat, drink, gamble. Eat, drink, gamble. Paradise Lost.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.